Well, this is a first for everything. I've never done a sermon before. Get rid of the little dinger here. So my second major life-changing experience happened on August 24th, 2006. I had been living for the past half year with a friend in San Leandro and his fiance. My friend had been helping me to record some of my music. I had come home this night and was chatting with my friend's girlfriend. They are African-American, and I asked her, what is up with black kids who, I had been noticing, have been becoming more and more abusive to me as I was waiting at bus stops during the past year? Cheryl talked to me about unhealed racial anger that gets passed from generation to generation. That's really interesting, I said, and asked if we can talk about this more later, but it was getting late, and I had to get to the BART to go to Berkeley to take care of a friend's dog. As I walked down the dark street to the Bayfair BART, I suddenly found myself confronted by a young man who told me what they were about to do to me. Then, strangely, he said, I'm sorry we have to do this. I've never known why deer stand motionless when a light shines in their eyes, likely about to be run over or shot instead of escaping a bad situation. Now I do. Total fear freezes them. Like a puppet, I watched, helpless to struggle or try to run, as he guided me by the shoulder off to the side of the road where, I now know, his three friends were hiding. My last memory screaming in my head, oh God, I'm in trouble. A passerby saw my feet sticking out from behind the bushes where I had been dragged and called the police. 3 days later, a friend told me he was sitting by my hospital bed praying I would wake from a coma that they were unsure I would survive. He said, suddenly I sat up and said, James, I've got to forgive these guys. How do I do that? Then I fell back asleep, and when I woke up again, it was done. I have never, ever had a moment of anger or vengeance for these four young guys. Only concern and compassion and curiosity. How could someone do something like this for no reason? I would have given them whatever they asked for if they had given me a chance. I've had people say, well, you're a spiritual guy, that's why you forgave them. And I would usually respond, I'm not that spiritual. I've been carrying stuff around forever that I could not let go of. But somehow, all that was gone. I had what I called a clean slate. Maybe it was because of the brain injury or the post-traumatic stress disorder which I've been dealing with ever since. But I was free of all resentment. All four young men were caught not long after this incident. Fortunately, because I learned that my two police-trained nephews were making plans to fly out from New Jersey to find them. When I later spoke with the detective in charge of my case, he said he called the hospital every day to see how I was. I asked, isn't that a little above and beyond the call of duty? He said, no. He wanted to find out how to charge these guys. Was it murder or attempted murder? Oh. The other three guys said they just knocked me down to rob me, as they had been doing with other victims. But this guy, Ray Kidd, for some unknown reason, just started repeatedly kicking my head until they thought they were leaving a dead man. For the next 6 years, I had many questions running around in my head, whys and hows, and I would create answers, which I've learned is very common for crime victims, until I did meet him and ask the only person who might know the answer to my questions, while the state does all it can to prevent any contact between victim and offender. After we met, the constant questions stopped. If you don't know, ain't nobody knows. Now I can let it go. Almost a year after this incident, I learned Ray was to be sentenced to prison as an adult, having accepted a plea bargain, and I could write a letter that would be read to him in court. My letter said that I wanted him to know that the person he was going to prison because of holds nothing against him, that I was hoping that he would use this time for healing himself. Also, I said, I'm very concerned about him, and I will be trying to find a way to meet him. The DA warned before the sentencing that I will likely receive only ridicule from Ray when this is read. Instead, I watched as Ray, 18 now, listened intently, nodding his head as the judge suggested he follow this man's advice. I spent the next 3.5 years trying to find a way to meet Ray, but no one seemed to think it was even possible. I was involved in a religious science church at the time and in the choir, which was invited to sing in San Quentin. It turned out to be a graduation for guys who had just completed their Insight Prison Project's Victim Offender Education Group training, which I had never heard of, but which I've since volunteered with as a surrogate victim, where we share our stories with the guys inside, hear some of their stories, and give them the opportunity to meet someone who has been harmed by a crime, as they will likely never meet their victim, and possibly give them a chance to apologize for their actions to someone who will probably never receive that from their offender. What a beautiful experience this is for us all, after they have gone through 1.5 years of deeply looking at their lives, how their lives ended up here. After the graduation, I asked the facilitator if she knew how I could meet Ray. She found he was in Folsom Prison and hooked me up with a Victim Offender Dialogue, VOD, facilitator, Jack Dyson, who contacted Ray and told him that the guy he nearly killed would like to meet him in a VOD. Jack then, for the next 1.5 years, drove to Folsom to meet with Ray and to Oakland to spend time with me, preparing us to meet. In my meetings with Jack, a couple things stand out for me. Jack said that I needed to talk about how I've been harmed. I didn't want to do this. Ray was already serving time, and it wasn't my intention to rub his face in it. But I finally agreed, since it was part of the program. The other was Jack's probing and exploration of my psyche, having a difficult time believing that I held no animosity toward Ray and didn't want it coming out suddenly, unexpectedly during the VOD. I was grateful for this process because I wasn't sure myself if something was hiding inside. We discovered together it was real. I always say that I never believed much in miracles until one happened to me. But this was a miracle which changed my life and Ray's. In 2012, nearly 6 years after the incident, Jack and I drove to Folsom. We were given a conference room guarded by an assistant warden. Before we left him outside, he told me he couldn't understand why I wanted to do this, saying, "These guys are not worth it." Jack and I waited a few minutes before Ray came in, crossed the room, walked right up to me, and we embraced for a really long time. Can you imagine? A guy violently almost kills someone, and 6 years later, the first thing they do is hug. I guess a miracle is something that happens in spite of its unlikeliness. During our next few hours together, I asked Ray if he remembered the letter read to him 5 years earlier, which was expected to only evoke his hostility. Ray said, "That's the thing that changed my life." He had listened. He said when he arrived in Folsom, he thought, "What if I meet this guy? I've got to change." He made a good connection with a therapist, did his GED, started on his AA degree, and then met Jack and experienced that deep therapeutic process. He did follow my advice. When it came time to discuss my harm, I told Ray I hadn't wanted to do this. "No," he replied, "I need to hear this. I need to accept responsibility for what I've done." So I talked about all the headaches and dizziness I deal with, and the very frustrating memory problems that I have. And then I shared about the PTSD stuff and how I feel like I'm walking in a dream and feel totally disconnected from the world and from my own life, and how I don't know how to get out of this. Ray appeared excited when I shared this, and I soon found out why. Since he was coming out soon, we talked about what we would like each other to do. Ray said when he comes out, he wants to help kids not go in the direction he had, and he'd like us to do this together. And then he said he wanted to write about this experience, which also he imagined us writing together. And then he added, I'm hoping someday this is going to be the title of our book, "Maybe I'll Be Your Healing." After he nearly took my life, and his life was changed by my letter, he wanted to help me come out of my PTSD by assisting me to reconnect with the world. That unfortunately hasn't happened yet. This Berkeley Fellowship is actually helping me with that and actually healing my life, my whole life of introversion and disconnection. I'm a very shy guy. When Ray came out, I learned it was against his parole stipulations to have any contact with his victim, regardless of his victim's requests, until he completed his 3-year parole. Although I would get glowing reports from his boss at Community Works, doing exactly what he said he wanted to do, helping kids potentially in trouble. Unfortunately, after 2.5 years, for some unknown reason, Ray went AWOL, and I have feelers out trying to locate him to continue our work and conversation together. When I've had opportunities to share my story, I sometimes have difficulty with folks not liking me talking about forgiveness. My sister says, don't hurt my kids and expect me to forgive. I say, I'm not preaching, I'm just sharing my experience. I say, forgiveness is usually a very difficult process. For some reason, I woke up there, but normally you are hurting and want the person that hurt you to hurt too. Gradually, there may be the understanding that this is hurting you, and maybe start thinking about forgiveness for your sake. And then maybe start exploring how to forgive, and then maybe getting there, getting free. Also, what I share often receives the accusation that I am blaming the victim. I had struggled the first year to understand why this would happen to me. I always had this sense of being protected. Having been a social worker in Camden, New Jersey, considered one of the worst cities in the country, my friends always expressed concern that I may be hurt. No, I won't. I'm protected, I would say. Then this thing happened. Where was that protection? Did I just make that up? For a year, I wondered, and then suddenly it hit me. A year before it happened, about the time I started being harassed by kids when I was waiting for the bus, I was becoming friends and falling in love with a woman that was in a troubled marriage, thinking that I'll just wait until she leaves her husband and then I'll be the first in line. Then I learned she did leave and went off with an African-American man, and I had an irrational resentment towards black men. When I first realized this, I shared it in a talk I was giving on restorative justice. I hadn't been aware that in the audience was Ray's foster mom's husband, who said, "Now it all makes sense. Ray doesn't know why he did what he did to you. They were just knocking people down to rob them and then running off to get some more weed or drink. Instead, he nearly killed you." I had learned about and got involved in the study called A Course in Miracles after my assault because I learned it was about forgiveness, and I wanted to understand what happened to me. The Course says, we, all of us together, are the one child of God. But we have fallen into a dream where we have forgotten our unity and oneness. The way to begin to wake up and remember who we are is to forgive others for that which they have not done, since it's in our dream. I was also given the opportunity to share about restorative justice with a group of judges from Tibet who talked about karma as getting paid back for our actions. I told them that no, karma is actually seeing out there what's going on in here and having the opportunity to heal it. I always blame my dad for being an Archie Bunker-like racist, and I was Meathead, the good guy. What Ray did for me was give me the opportunity to see it in myself and heal it there. I have just discovered a book called Radical Forgiveness. The author talks about how we are attracted to people who help us see our wounds inside and often, like Ray, don't even understand why they are doing the things they are doing to us. On the 10th anniversary of this incident, I held a concert playing some of my songs called My 10th Anniversary of the Whack on the Head Concert. Using the picture on today's bulletin of a Zen master whacking his disciple to help him wake up. I consider Ray my unwitting Zen master. About a year before I met Ray in Folsom, I had learned about and recently discovered the Gospel of Judas. Judas was not Jesus's betrayer. He was his best disciple who, when asked to do so by Jesus, told the leaders where to find him so that he could fulfill his mission of speaking for God's children who the elders and Romans were harming. I then wrote a song about Ray, who has helped me to begin to wake up, that I'll be playing now with the choir, called My Judas. Namaste. Thank you.